possibility means you have a chance.
Passion opens the door to all possibilities.
When I feel like anything's possible, I feel kind of giddy.
I want to be an astronaut,
an artist,
an actress.
To visit another country.
All I need is a backpack and a pair of shoes and I'll find a way.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
I've never felt like more things are possible than right now.
In the right shoes, anything's possible.
DSW, countless shoes at bragworthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
Want to know who it is?
Tell me. Can I guess?
Yes.
Draymond Green.
Yep. Draymond Green. Good guess.
I think you might have mentioned it before off the air, but just the way you built it up, it had to be Draymond Green. And I'll say this. I had a brief interaction with Draymond on a Raiders sideline back when they were in Oakland. And couldn't have been nicer. Could not have been nicer.
Telling you, like one of
stand
these,
on it. One of stand these, on what you say.
I'm trying
stand
to.
Stand on what you do,
Draymond. I am. When Chase Center wasn't open yet, and some of the members of the media were invited to go tour it, so they could show us what it was going to look like, and we had to wear it. It's the only time in my life I've worn a hard hat. Got to wear a hard hat, right?
And a vest.
Put on one of them vests.
Yep.
Walk around and act like we're in dangerous territory, but we're just inside Chase Center. And on that particular run, Draymond was with us, and it was just one of these people. There's always kind of different levels to it. Some people will shake your hand and be very nice. I've had a lot of people be very, very nice. I try to be nice to people. If you're nice to them, they're nice to you. I think that usually works. But there are certain people who are like, I am going to go over the top to make an effort to look you in your eye and hear what you're saying before I kind of respond. And it wasn't a lengthy conversation by any stretch. But that's how Draymond was. And I don't know that most people would expect that from Draymond Green.
Right.
But that's how Draymond Green was.
That's how it is. That's how it was for me. Yeah. Quick handshake. I was like, keep doing it. And he's like, thank you. And I walked away and I looked back and I was like, how is he able to do what he does at that size? Because he might be 6'5".
Not that big.
He's not 6'8".
He's not that big.
I mean, he's big and fit and muscular, but it's not like he's 6'9", 6'10".
It's a complete mystery.
Right. I give him 6'5", but probably not much more.
Hey, Lucas, what did Tommy Pham do to you? What did Tommy Pham do to you, Pham?
Oh, boy. I'll try and make a longer story short.
It's a 3.
Go ahead. Dibs teased the story perfectly because it had to do with that slap heard around the world with Jock Peterson.
Oh.
This was 2 or 3 years ago. It had just happened. Get the bloop ready, Grandy. I was hosting the afternoon show with my good friend Ray Ratto. I was filling in on the afternoon. And I knew that I had really good seats that night. The Reds were in town. Tommy Pham, he's played for a million teams. But at that time, he was a Red. And he was in town, and he was coming to that game. I knew I had amazing seats. The best seats I've ever sat in for any game ever. They're the ones, I think it's the Audi Club, like right, your head is level with the dirt.
Keep going, man. As long as we keep getting drips, I'm happy. Go ahead.
I was like 10 feet from the visitors on deck circle.
Okay.
Right? So you can picture where that is. And I knew that Tommy Pham was going to be in town, and I'm hosting the afternoon show, so I'm on the air brainstorming, what should I ask? What would be a fun way to just get him to respond, have some fun? And I'm like, you guys know me. I'm not a jerk. I just, want to have some interaction.
Right, yeah. You missed a drip there, Grandy, by the way.
Not a jerk, right?
No, when you were like, and I'm hosting the afternoon show.
Yeah. Second time. Did you hear that?
Yes.
Have you guys ever done that, by the way, hosting the afternoon? It's pretty fun.
I'm working towards it.
American dream.
Cool. Yeah.
Cool. So I was just brainstorming in my head what I was going to ask him, and what I landed on, right, I was going to ask him something that let him know I knew he was a jerk because he slapped Jock Peterson over fantasy football. And this was around July-ish, so people are starting to get in the mindset of fantasy football. My draft coming up soon enough, starting to think about where are we going to draft certain players, all this stuff. And so what I think he was second up, it was top of the first. I got there plenty of time, made sure I was there for his first at-bat. He's batting second, comes out onto the on-deck circle. And so I, very close, you can hear anything anybody's saying right there. You missed a drop. That was close, Grandy.
Very close.
Thank you. So where I landed was, Tommy, what are you thinking at the top of the draft? Christian McCaffrey, he's injured right now. Who if you had the number one overall pick, who's the top of your draft board?
Dude, that's a lengthy heckle. You got all that out?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, okay.
What's he doing?
I mean, in the on-deck circle. Yeah. Maybe
late arriving crowd, too.
In my head, that was the question. Maybe I was like, Tommy, who's the number one overall pick in fantasy this year? That's probably how it sounded.
Okay.
And he turns around. He looks, tries to find who said that.
Who said that
who
to me?
Who said that to who dared voice that to me? And he finds me. We make eye contact. And he goes, man, you ugly as... Turns back around, starts taking some dry hacks.
Oh, man.
I had no idea how to respond. My only response was to just die laughing. One of my really close friends, we're just like...
What else can you do?
Yeah, that didn't break my stride, by the way. I still had 3 or 4 more questions the rest of the way, all about fantasy. Didn't look around the rest of the game.
Yeah, yeah. He had already given you his one response.
Yeah.
Wow, Lucas.
That's a tough one.
First of all, since you're still carrying that around, I just want you to know that there are definitely probably people on this earth who think you're a very handsome man. So I don't want you
Thank
to take
you.
And what? Probably an equal amount of people who are actually uglier than he is as well.
An equal amount of people.
Does that mean I'm thoroughly average looking? I appreciate that.
Let's do producer ugly tiers. Let's call Mike Sando. What tier is Lucas in? Tier 1, tier 2? I'm kidding. We don't need to do that. But no, Tommy Pham.
I should pull out my deep dive I've already done.
Tommy Pham is someone that to me, and this was even before he slapped Jock. Like when you listen to him do an interview or you look at his face on TV, I'm like, that guy's probably really a jerk. That's probably really a jerk.
He was suspended again this year for making gestures to fans.
Right, right. Now,
Lucas, the vice president of hate.
You did start it.
I mean, you're a professional athlete. How do you not have something fun like, oh, yeah, that's a good one. I haven't heard that one before.
I know. I remember, you guys won't remember this guy because he wasn't very good, but Dibs, do you remember a backup catcher for the Reds named Joe Oliver?
Of course.
Yeah, okay. So this is probably circa... I don't know, late 80s, early 90s, maybe.
Yeah. You had me thinking of Ron Oster. Yeah. On that same, Chris Sabo.
Tom Browning
on the Reds.
I'm out in the Candlestick bleachers, you know, with my $6 tickets or whatever, and Oliver's out in left field warming up before the game. And somebody just tried to heckle him because they were announcing the starting lineup and everybody's stats are up on the board. And they're just like, Oliver, you're hitting 160, dude. Like, how the hell are you not getting more? I mean, he's just in him, killing him for his batting average. And Oliver just, like, he took it for a little while, and he kept playing catch. And then he finally looked up at the guy and looked at him. He goes, yeah, I'm getting paid, though. And just kept playing catch. And you know, now we're a little bit more cynical and ready for stuff like that. Back then, that was like the crowd was like, oh. It was an inappropriate response. They didn't like it, but he was, and he did, and he said it. So
yeah, he made $8.7 million over about 14-year career.
Yeah, well, back then, a lot of money.
In his first year with the Reds, he made $68,000.
Oh,
1989.
Okay,
so that is akin to Kisner. Who's probably making a clean 800 grand for being the same as Joe Oliver.
No doubt. Real quick, a lot of people want to weigh in, and we're going to get to a bunch of you, but somebody wanted to call in about Draymond. Omar in Oakland. Hey, Omar, what you got on Draymond?
I'm the real Omar, first of all.
Okay.
I've been calling you after years. I don't know who the other Omar was, but
well, there are,
I got two stories, man.
There's multiple Omars in this world. Real quick, Omar, because we're up against it. What do you got?
2019. Warriors are still practicing in downtown Oakland, and I was going to this place called Specialties Cafe. They closed down on Clay Street, made good food, good smoothies, everything. I see Draymond. He was getting inside of his Porsche, and I clearly rolled a window down. I was like, what's up, Draymond? And he just looked at me, and I'm like, what's up, man? And like, he didn't even want to acknowledge me, and I gave him the finger.
Oh,
it is what it is. But I want to bring this up. Four years before that, it was like 2015, I was in San Francisco, and I seen Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant was still on OKC, and it was me and my cousin just walking around about a Four Seasons on Market, and I was like, Kevin Durant, could we get a picture? He's like, I got you, man, when I come back. He went to the GameStop, crossed the street, and honored his word and took a picture of us. So Kevin Durant was really a better person to me than Draymond, and but you won't hear that in the media.
Omar, it actually doesn't surprise me at all. I think we do, and thank you, Omar. I think we've heard through the years tons of stuff about Durant. Durant is a absolute sweetheart.
Oh, yeah.
Like, based on what I've heard. I don't know Kevin.
And both he and Draymond are undercover, super helpful to those who are in need.
Absolutely. And then the only thing on Draymond, because I wasn't there, I can't speak on it. I will tell you this. Dude, when you roll down your window and yell someone's name who's walking down the street, there's a minute where you're like, what's about to happen? Like, it's a little unsettling. I feel like it, so maybe it'd be different if you were walking down the street and somebody could put a dap on you or something like that. When you roll down a window and scream at someone, it's a little like, whoa, where's this coming from? What's about to go down? So I don't know. Maybe that had something to do with it. All right. We've already given away one pair of tickets to Saturday's Giants game. We got another one courtesy of Levi's coming up this hour. Alex Pavlovich is coming up this hour. We'll get some more of your calls next on Willard and Dan.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at bragworthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
And I clearly rolled a window down. I was like, what's up, Draymond? And he just looked at me, and I'm like, what's up, man? And like, he didn't even want to acknowledge me, and I gave him the finger.
Stand on it. Stand on what you say. Stand on what you do.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
I love that. I said hi. He didn't say hi back. I did then give him the finger.
I gave him the finger.
And wow, dude, a little hot. It's a little hot, Omar.
You know what that is, right? It's an escalation sensation.
That's a good one. That one got by me.
It was a reach. And yeah. I mean, he went from, it was a one or a two back and forth. He went straight to an eight. I mean, he didn't throw something you know, act out too violently, but going to the middle finger as a man who is quick to go to a digit while driving, less and less now, but I've been known to throw it up.
Good. And by the way, don't ever do it to Draymond Green. Like, if there's a short list of things I can promise you I'm never going to do in life, it's flip off Draymond Green. Like, I'm not going to flip off Draymond Green, no matter what happens.
Right.
We're not doing that. I choose not to.
If you wanted to rank your Bay Area athletes that you would not flip off, he would be probably on the Rushmore. Jimmy Butler's on that list.
Yeah.
Trent Williams is on that list.
I can't remember the last time I flipped someone off.
Well,
it's not my go-to.
It's not my go-to either.
It's kind of your go-to.
It's not my go-to.
It used to be.
Well, less and less now.
You just said, yeah, less and less.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's not my go-to. Like, and usually it depends on... it's almost like football, down and distance. For me, it depends more on situation and when I'm driving, the vehicle of the driver who has just cut me off. Today I was cut off in the East Bay by somebody in a white Prius.
Okay.
You're getting the horn.
Well, a little dap on the horn is fine. But, you know.
I gave him the horn.
I know. Don't, like, you just scare me when you do, because I don't trust, you trust people more than I do. Apparently.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm not getting this middle finger off. And then, like, that makes me feel better. But now I'm going to trust that you're not going to, like, I don't know, shoot a bullet into my car.
It's possible.
Whatever. Like, yeah.
Or in my case, roll up to me at a Mervyn's in 1980 and punch me in the face. And that was a.
In the face?
That was a verbal middle finger. And I took the L that day.
Yeah. But I bet you fought back.
I bounced back. I don't fight back for nothing. I was on my back with my friends laughing at me.
It is pretty funny.
Took it on the chin. Yeah.
All right, another pair of Giants tickets later on this hour. We invite you to subscribe to Willard and Dibs on the free Odyssey app or wherever you find your favorite podcast. And then do it for the Morning Roast and Steiny and Goo as well. Shohei Ohtani is likely. I'm going to say likely. That way I can stay covered over here because I've never met the man. But in my opinion, Shohei Ohtani is likely an awful person. That's my take. I'm
sorry. At the very least, he's facing his second legal challenge over the past 2 years.
And it's helping me be a little bit more outward with what I've thought all along. I don't believe the story. I just don't. It doesn't mean I know what did happen. I just don't believe what they're telling me happened with regard to the whole translator gambling, transfer of funds, and off to jail you go. I just don't buy it. I do not buy it. There's so much at stake. Would Major League Baseball step in and make something like this go away? You damn well better believe they would. So that's my belief. A little bit of a conspiracy theory, that's fine. I'll wear that. That's how I feel. And then this news story comes out today. He's being sued along with his agent for being invited into a real estate deal to be the face of it, and then coming in, taking over, and getting the people who invited him fired. So millions of dollars at stake again. And it got us kind of talking about when pro athletes have been jerks to you. Lucas heckled Tommy Pham and got one verbally on the chin. Omar flipped off Draymond Green. I had a wonderful experience with Draymond Green. So did you. I'm sure these are all human beings, so they've got good days, bad days.
I got blown off by Dante Culpepper in a Ford Field elevator.
Do you know who was absolutely miserable to be around? And it wasn't even like a bad... He didn't do anything directly toward me. But this will be funny, and this is, boy, you want to talk about what feels like 80 lives ago? I used to have to cover the Los Angeles Dodgers. I had to go to all the games.
I was going to boop, but he wants it to be poop.
Every...
Because he don't like that team.
...single game. And then they walk down again and down the elevator.
Hey, Clayton, another gem for you. The curveball looked like it was really snapping. How'd that feel for you?
I'm glad that you think I'm that young. This was pre-Kershaw, but... go all the way down the elevator.
Sandy Koufax, I mean, you had a really good game.
In between.
I love you.
Thank you.
Into Jim Tracy's office, who, by the way, nicest human being on the face of the planet, but had to go down there, and then when Jim and all the assembled media, boy, you had a great performance by your bullpen today, Jim. How'd that feel? And I'm just like, barf, barf, barf on all of you. Barf on this stadium and your stupid hot dogs and everything that you stand for and represent. Barf. But it's my job.
Yep.
So I'm here. So one day after the game and after all the interviews, you have to go in that elevator that's like on the inside. So the players use the elevator too. This is how they would get down to their cars. So one time, and if you're a fan of a certain age, you'll remember these names. And maybe you will, Grandy and Lucas. Do you remember Paul LaDuca? And do you remember Kevin Brown?
Oh, yeah.
I remember Paul LaDuca for sure.
All right. Kevin Brown was a great pitcher.
He was a great pitcher.
Heavy sinker.
But a real, real first-class jerk. And nothing happened other than there was a game where I ended up on the elevator with Kevin Brown and Paul LaDuca.
I gave him the finger.
And the elevator, it gets to a certain floor, and Kevin Brown exits. But Kevin was one of these people where if he's in an elevator with you, you ever been around these people where it's just like, oh, God, it's tense. Nobody's saying anything, but the energy coming off of this guy is like, good Lord. Dude, are you okay? You know when someone's just
going to... He's a classic red ass.
Absolutely. So Kevin steps off the elevator, and it feels like 500 pounds get off the elevator. Doors closed. It's me and one other media guy. And LaDuca's still on there. LaDuca, his teammate. Looks at the two of us and goes, boy, he's a barrel of laughs, isn't he? And it just broke us up so much. It was wonderful because LaDuca was the opposite. He was a ton of fun, really good guy to the media, very nice, fun guy to be around. And it really helped us out because the media hated talking to Kevin Brown because he was so surly. And to hear one of his teammates sort of admit, like he's just a red ass, that's how he is. It made dealing with the whole thing a little bit easier for the rest of the year.
No doubt. Yeah. And quietly great career for Kevin Brown.
Yeah, he's a good pitcher.
211 wins. And for the Hall of Fame, he lasted one ballot. He got 2%, and that's going to do it.
Wow. Didn't he no-hit the Giants when he was with the Padres?
That sounds right.
I think Kevin Brown no-hit the Giants one time. Yeah. So anyway, same guy. Total jerk. Woo! Oh, my God. You didn't want to be in a room with Kevin Brown. When it was his start and you had to go talk to him, oh, two-word answers and just knives coming out of his eyes.
Yeah, 99-03 with your Dodgers.
Oh,
June 10th, 1997. No hit the Giants when he was a Marlin.
Oh, when he was a Marlin?
Yeah.
I thought it was when he was with the Fathers, but it was when he was with the Fish. All right.
Yeah, 1 year with the Fathers. He had an 8.6 WAR that year.
Oh, God.
Led baseball.
That's high.
Yeah.
So high.
So high.
All right.
So high!
Thank you, Dave. Let's talk to some more people. Let's go to Stefan in Oakland. Hi, Stefan. What are you doing?
How's it going, gentlemen?
What's up?
I just want to tell you about the time when I ran across Reggie Jackson back in the 70s when the A's were during their heyday. I was about 11, 12. Me and a few friends were over at King of States. Dibs, you might know the school, right off of 580.
Used to live about a half mile from there.
Football game. Yeah. Playing pickup football game. We got a little thirsty, so we decided to cross the freeway over to Oak Knoll, that little grocery store right there on the corner.
Still there.
And there was a black Porsche. Yeah, it's still there. There was a black Porsche Turbo Carrera with the big whale tail sitting there. So we're sitting there admiring it. And who pops out of Oak Knoll but Reggie Jackson? Mr. Reggie Jackson. So me and my buddies like, hey, Reggie Jackson, how you doing? You know, we're all juiced. Reggie gave us a look like, go away, kids, you bother me. Didn't say a word to us. Hopped in his Porsche and just drove off. Not saying, didn't even acknowledge us, but that sneer he gave us.
Stefan, I'll just say, man, you're not the first one to have that feeling about Reggie Jackson. Mr. October was a great baseball player. I've never met the man. But he, even when you listen to him talk, he feels a little rough around the edges sometimes.
There has been a significant softening as he's now approaching being 80 years old.
That happens.
He just turned 79 in May, but my earlier conversations with him when I was producing radio, trying to get him to come on, didn't really go as well as my later conversations with him later in my career when get in your 70s. It's really hard to continue to have that grizzled edge.
No doubt. And I'm glad to hear that. 4880 on the Boxer and Gerson Work Injury Attorneys text line. Met Charles Barkley working the door at a club in Scottsdale. He was a bleep to us, and then that night got a DUI.
Whoa.
Charles, actually, I've had wonderful experiences with Charles.
Yeah.
Like, multiple. I think Charles
at that golf tournament, probably, right?
Well, it was the golf tournament. And he and Tony Bruno knew each other a little bit, so we ran into him in an airport one time, and he sat there and talked to us for 10 minutes. Just kind of a gem of a person, but that I didn't feel was fair because I'm like, you know Tony,
right?
And I'm just standing next to Tony,
guys.
Right? So it's all good. But yeah, I ran into him when Abe, now 18, when Abe was a baby, and carrying him through the Edgewood clubhouse at the Tahoe golf tournament. And Barkley came walking through, and he kind of did a little coochie coochie coo thing, like he rubbed Abe's cheek, and Abe was a happy baby, and he rubbed his cheek, and he just goes, happy baby, happy baby. And then he just kept walking
through. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, like I think he's a sweetheart. But all these people, again, I want to give just a little grace to the idea of, if people were stopping you constantly everywhere you went for pictures and autographs, you're going to have a handful that don't go well. I do believe that.
Especially when you get to that stratosphere. And
totally.
I just keep thinking about being at Summer League with Grandy this year, and you see a lot of famous people in the basketball community. And we had Alex Tui on, one of the new Warrior rookies. And, he's 6'5", and he's a tall human being. And I saw him walking on the concourse, and not a person recognizing him. No one going up to him like, Alex, do you have a minute? And maybe someday he'll get to that level.
Maybe.
But, here's a guy who's a professional basketball player. But then you think about Steph Curry trying to go to Costco, or we had that Safeway appearance he did. And then, it's just like every single second of his life, somebody wants a pick or a high five or something.
Right. He can't even go to Chase Center without getting attacked by Guru. For crying out loud.
Well, he was at Valhalla the other night, and the camera's on him at every time out.
Oh,
and
no.
He's dancing and doing the thing.
I'm
so
kidding, Daryl. But yeah, like, actually, to me, that's yet another feather in the cap of Steph Curry, that through it all, have you ever heard anyone on planet Earth be like, yeah, there was that time that Steph Curry was a jerk to me? Have you ever heard anyone say that? I never have.
I mean,
I never have.
Well, now you're jinxing a perfect game. So if the report comes out.
I've never heard it. I've never heard it.
I haven't either.
And I've heard the opposite literally thousands of times.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, Kenneth in San Jose. Hi, Kenneth. Thanks for calling.
What's going on, fellas? How y'all doing?
What's up?
Hey, so this was in 2012. I used to work at a CVS in Burlingame, and I used to work overnight. And this was right after the Giants beat. Appreciate that. Right after the Giants beat the Cardinals in the NLCS. And who do I see walk in? I see Angel Pagan. So, you know, I'm not one to never, you know, I don't ever ask for autographs or anything like that. But I'm like, hey, what's up, Pagan? You know, like, you know, congratulations, you know, go Giants, you know. He goes about his, you know, his, he's buying some things or whatever. And he comes to the cash register. I'm ringing him up. And he asked for a lighter, you know, so he didn't specify what color. So I just got whatever was right there. And it was like a light reddish one. It might have been pink. I don't know. But when I gave it to him, he's like, hey, man. He's like, hey, I don't roll that way. I don't roll that way. I'm just like, you know, he's trying to insinuate, you know.
Right.
So I'm just like, oh, whatever. Like, get the hell out of here. He left and that was that. But I was just like, yeah, screw this guy. Like, yeah, I never seen him the same way again. I was like, yeah, all right, whatever, dude. But yeah, that's all. Real quick, 5 years before that, I seen Willie Mays on a airplane going to New York, and like I said, you know, I wasn't gonna bother him or anything, but I seen him and I was like, hey, go Giants, Mays, go Giants, and he just, you know, gave me the biggest smile
Thank goodness. I did, Kenneth, thank you. I did not want a bad Willie Mays story.
No,
please, I don't.
I have
one
career interaction. It was at spring training, probably 2012, with my old show, The Rise Guys, and we're just standing in the Giants clubhouse like idiots because we're never there, and it's spring training. And Marty Lurie, God bless him, he's like Willie's closest friend.
Right.
Hey, Willie, here's a buddy, here's a friend of mine, Dan Dibley. Dan, come over here, meet Willie. And so I'm like, meet Willie. So I can shake his hand. Hey, how you doing, young man? And this and that. And it was a quick 2 minutes of back and forth. And I was like, dude, Willie Mays.
Dude.
Marty Lurie is forever like at the top of my list of like all-time good guys.
Marty's a tremendous human being.
That was an example of Marty. Like, Dan, get over here.
You ever have any of those celebrity interactions that just almost overwhelm you? Like where you're just like, whoa, this is a little too much.
Yeah,
I don't really get starstruck very often. There's like 2-3 moments in my life where you're just like, I mean, it was fine, but you're just sort of like, it just feels different. Like this person next to me is such a big star. This is such a big star. I can remember being, when I was doing sideline for USC, shoulder to shoulder with Tiger Woods. And you're just like, holy crap. And it was at the height of his deal. You're just like,
hey,
dude,
totally.
You're just kind of like looking around at people in the stands. You know, you want someone to be like, do you see this? Did you see him standing? The Tiger Woods. Forget the football game.
Yeah.
Tiger Woods is here. Just stuff like that. Got a chance to meet Bonds just last year.
Yep.
And that went great, and it was brief and not a big deal at all. And I'm now at an age in my life where whatever, but you're just like, whew. Barry Bonds.
And that's where the Kid Willard comes out.
Yeah,
you know,
like, whoa, that's a big deal.
Robin Williams was that for me.
Oh, man,
and I screwed it up so bad. Like, it couldn't have gone worse. He was filming a movie called Jack at the middle school, at the grammar school at which I worked in Ross. And so he was there every day. One day during a break, he's walking across the field, and I'm a PE teacher at the time, so I got a Frisbee in my hand. I'm an elite Frisbee thrower.
You were Frisbee guy before Frisbee guy.
I played ultimate, the whole thing. So I shout out about 20 yards away, hey, Robin. And I gesture like, let's have a catch. And he stops, and I throw the Frisbee. And I'm going to throw one of these majestic, like, little benders and lead right to him. Well, the wind catches it. It curves, goes the other way, hits the blacktop, rolls underneath a work truck.
Oh, geez.
So Robin Williams, he had already accepted the social contract of we're going to have a catch.
Right.
So now he's kind of obligated to get it. So this man walks over, gets on all fours, crawls under this work truck, gets to his feet, stands up, doesn't even really look at me, and just goes, quack, and just rips off a backhand throw that is right to me. By the time it's out of his hand, he's all but sprinting away from me.
He's like, we're not doing any more of this.
Gone.
I don't need to end up crawling because you want to throw me a frisbee.
And he's one of my all-time heroes. And I had a moment to have a moment with a hero, and it could not have gone worse. Unless I like hit him in the face with it.
In the face?
He's crawling on the blacktop to retrieve a frisbee.
That's embarrassing.
I have a similar story, Dibs, in the same vein. When I was a freshman at Oregon, that was the year that Marcus Mariota won the Heisman, and they went all the way to the national championship game.
Yeah.
I'm playing pickup basketball at the Student Rec Center, and who walks in fresh off winning a Heisman but Marcus Mariota to play, and we're playing together with a group of other guys, and I had the worst game of my entire life. Could not hold on to the ball, could not dribble it, could not make a shot.
Hey, Lucas, I hope you're getting this. Invite Mariota to the knockout tournament next year. Please. Celebrity appearance. We have found the man's kryptonite.
It's kryptonite.
It's Marcus Mariota.
That is so great.
Oh, gosh. Let's go to Fabian, who's in Baltimore, Maryland. Hey, Fabian, what's up?
Hey, what's up? Hold on, I got to shoot out of here loud. But, I got one from our guy, Navarro Bowman. So I'm here in Maryland. So we went to Washington Commanders. They weren't Commanders at the time, I don't think, versus Niners. My Niners are in town. And big win. So after the game, people are signing autographs. I'm like, I'm not really an autograph guy, but I'm like, they're signing. So let me just shoot over there and get one. So Navarro Bowman is there. He's signing. I'm like, all right. I walk up. I forgot what I have. I think I had this, like, an animal or something like that. And he just kind of looks at me, and he's like, I'm not signing that. And I couldn't get why. And, like, so I just walked up and just got my feelings hurt. And it was like, it really left, like, a sour taste in my mouth. And then I would see him a couple times because, you know, he's from the area. He's from Maryland, and I would see him at some day parties. I wouldn't say nothing to him, but I saw his boys. They all have 49er jackets on. I'd say what's up to them. But, yeah, I just walked up and got my feelings hurt, man. And I think he was just like, I'm not signing no D's autograph and whatever. Like, I know that's a thing sometimes. I'm not even the type of person to go up and get an autograph, but I'm like, all right, he's right there, and he's signing them. We had a big win. I'm feeling good. And he just looked at me, he's like, I'm not signing that. And that was it. I'm feeling hurt.
Man,
Fabian,
still hurt.
Thanks.
That's
a
tough one. I'm not signing that. We call it a granimal or something, or a fanimal is what he called it. I'm not signing that fanimal.
Sometimes you got to go with what you got.
That's right.
You ever end up in a spot where you're going for an autograph, or like someone, you're like, ooh, I'd like that autograph when you're younger, and you're like, I don't have anything good for you to sign.
We used to wait at Candlestick outside the player's exit. You know, we'd go out of that one parking lot where the buses were, and I got Willie McCovey's on like a napkin. And needless to say, that napkin's no longer with us. We're talking 1977 or 78. And, you know, we weren't big autograph people either, but there were times where, can we get an autograph? And,
dude,
and Jack Clark and Willie McCovey and, you know, those type of era giants.
Grew up in Foster City, and one night there's a pizza place that was down the street from my house, and it's one of these, like, there's no tables in there. Like, it's just takeout. I think it was called Beethoven's Pizza.
Okay.
Okay? It was right over at Charter Square in Foster City. And my parents, I'd gotten old enough to where my parents were like, you go get the pizza for us and walk it back. We were that close. I'm like, all right, I'm going to walk over to Beethoven's Pizza to get the pizza. I'm in there, and the process of payment is happening. And who walks in? Hackman.
Jeffrey Leonard.
Ooh. It's me and Hack. That's it. That's the room and the employees. And I'm immediately looking around like, what do we got? I don't have a baseball on me.
Nope.
What do we got? Well, we got a Beethoven's Pizza to-go menu. That's what we got. And I'm like, Mr. Leonard, would you mind signing this? And he mumbles, to who? And I didn't hear him. So I went, what? And then he was annoyed. To who? And I'm like, come to Mark.
Okay.
But then
I gave him the finger.
Like he's
you can keep that.
He seems all mad, but then it's like, to Mark, best wishes. You know, go Giants. Yay. One flap down. Jeffrey Leonard. Woo. And I was like, oh my God, I'm out of here. Give him a menu.
Yep.
Give him a pizza. I'm going to get out of here before Hackman comes after me.
And of like we talked about athletes you wouldn't flip off currently. He's on the all-time list of athletes you would not want to give the middle finger to.
Yes. We don't want to give it to Alex Pavlovich either. NBC Sports Bay Area, he will join us next. And speaking of the Giants, we got another pair of tickets to this Saturday's game, Rays and Giants. Also, a City Connect concert featuring Saweetie following the game. It's all courtesy of Levi's, and we'll give them away next. So just keep listening. Also, we're brought to you by Fremont Bank. Here for you, here for good. Pabs is next on Willard and Dibs.
What does possibility mean to you?
That's a hard question.
Something that you can strive for.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
You're confident in yourself and you believe in yourself. Stuff that you could achieve.
I feel excited. Anything is possible when you're more confident.
Shoes are a huge part of that. They are the most important part of my style.
You can like express yourself
in the right shoes.
Anything is possible.
DSW, countless shoes at brag-worthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
Now, back to
Dillard and Wibbs
on 95.7 The Game.
Yeah, and Dillard and Wibbs about to come at you with a rat-a-tat-tat on the Giants and the Niners in this almost 5 o'clock hour. Alex Pavlovich, NBC Sports Bay Area, is going to be on with us momentarily.
Ooh.
David Lombardi, SF Standard, 520.
Huge.
So we're going to get your Giants, we're going to get your Niners, we're going to get all of it before we duck on out of here at 6 o'clock.
Ooh, I was going to say, I'd like to ask them who has ever blown them off. Maybe we can incorporate that
absolutely
into our interviews.
I bet they've had a ton of experiences that they didn't love with athletes. But anyway, you know what that sound means. It means, speaking of the Giants, we got a pair of tickets to give away to Saturday's game, the Rays and Giants at Oracle Park. And included in this is a City Connect concert featuring Saweetie following the game. This is all courtesy of Levi's. All you need to do is be caller 5 right now to our contest line, 415-523-4652. Caller 5 right now to our contest line, 415-523-4652. Good luck to each of you. Those of you who did not win, you do have the option to go to sfgiants.com. Now live to a man who needs no tickets to a Giants game. He is Alex Pavlovich of NBC Sports Bay Area, joining us now on the River Islands guest line. And before we get into Bo Mel and just the depressive nature of what's going on with Giants baseball right now, let's get to the good stuff, Alex. How's the book going? How's it going?
It's doing really well. It actually did so well that they moved to paperback already. So I'm very appreciative of everybody who bought one, who helped me. You guys had me on a couple times, so it's been great. And it's honestly, it's been something really cool to experience, like the book signings and meeting Giants fans and people who got it early. So it's been really nice.
Okay, there it is. The franchise. San Francisco Giants, A Curated History of the Orange and Black. That's from Alex Pavlovich, and it is available coming up here in paperback, and so you can get that wherever you get your books. Awesome. Well, congrats, Alex. That's fantastic, man.
I don't think they've won a game since it came out. But the book did well.
Yeah. Would you like to write a new chapter, 2025? This sucks. Like, how about that? Can we do that?
Yeah, there's a couple chapters of there of seasons that went in the tank, and this feels like, you know, I'm like, yeah, I've covered this a few times.
Alex, here's my question. It's the question they won't answer, and I'm starting to get frustrated by it. When people go, hey, you know, to Logan Webb or Bo Mel, and they're like, what is it? What happened? What's not working? Their answer across the board is, we don't know. Like, if we knew, we would fix it. So that's one of the reasons we want to come to someone like yourself. What is it? Why is this team not better?
You're going to hate me. I really don't know. I was doing this morning. I was looking up some of the offensive numbers. And the crazy thing is a lot of these guys are going to kind of end up where you would think, like where you would be like, okay, that was fine. He had the season that we expected from him. it just, they just cannot do it at the same time. And they, we saw Adames go crazy in July, but obviously we know early in the year for him, you know, right now it's Devers and it's Dom Smith, but it, there's guys behind him who aren't able to do it. So I don't know that I've ever covered a team where you're like, they're healthy. These are their guys. This is their lineup. You feel, if you look at the names every day and look at some of the numbers on the scorecard, it looks okay. But then you're not surprised when they score one run. I don't know what, I really don't. I think they are baffled by it a little bit. And I think there's going to be a deep dive in the offseason if it keeps going this way. But I don't know the exact answer, because there's been other teams I've covered where it's like, well, you know, they lost this guy, they lost that guy, this is really easy to figure out, or something happened along the way. I really don't know what to tell you. I mean, I look at the score, the lineup card today, and a lot of these guys are big names, and they're going to end up with 18 homers, 22 homers, 27, and they just can't put it together.
And I wondered situationally from whence those home runs derive. In other words, what situations? And that's something that I'm going to look at when I start to do my dive. But I look at a team yesterday, Alex, who had two at-bats with runners in scoring position, and they didn't deliver on either one. Is it as simple as a lack of lineup connectivity? Like you were saying, you might have two guys hot one game and then a different two the next.
Yeah, and I think that's hard to figure out. I mean, the easy thing to look at is, like, they just don't hit with runners in scoring position, and they haven't for a while now. And I think if there was one thing I'd point to overall, I don't, like, it's, they've been really bad at home, especially offensively, and I don't know that this team is fully built for this ballpark. I think they're trying to get there, and we've seen the way Buster is drafting, and we've seen, you know, some of the guys they've traded for. There is a different style, but this is a team that I think on the road, you see they can hit timely homers and they can get those extra base hits. They haven't been able to do it here. They don't run at all, which is something we've been waiting years for them to get more athletic. And I go back to, like, teams that I wrote about and teams during that book that, you know, you would have Angel Pagan and Gregor Blanco and Hunter Pence and these guys who would run a little bit and do some more things. I think that's part of it, but in general, I still think they have good players out there, and I think that's what I know. I get the frustration with Bob and his answers after games, but I think he looks up and there's a runner on second and a runner on third, and he sees two good players come up, and he thinks one of them will get the job done, and they just haven't done it.
Alex Pavlovich, NBC Sports Bay Area, with us here on Willard and Dibbs, 95.7 The Game. Let's dive a little further into the Bob situation. Alex, how safe is he at the end of the year?
That's a good question. I mean, you know, I said this at the time when they picked up the option that none of these things ever are guaranteed. I mean, it's an option for next year. It's not three more years. It's 1 year. And if the season goes completely in the tank, you never know. I mean, Buster could decide that, hey, we've changed our mind in the last 3 months. I mean, sometimes these things happen quickly, too. You look at, there was some ambiguity with Gabe and with Farhan in August and early September about what would actually happen. And there were a lot of questions. And then all of a sudden it just happened really quickly with both of those guys. I still think Bob will be safe. I think Buster likes working with him. I think, you know, in general, we've seen one thing we've heard from Buster over and over again in recent months is he has put some of this on the clubhouse, which usually you don't hear in professional sports, but I think rightfully he has pointed to these guys and gone, look, this is it's an expensive roster. You guys are a bunch of veterans and you haven't performed. And I think he would probably not feel great about even any perception that he has scapegoated a manager for a team that hasn't played well. I'm not saying that would be the case, but just even anything that it's putting it on one person when I think this is, you know, a failure across the board the last month. So I still think he would be safe, but certainly cannot feel as good as he did a month ago at this time or 6 weeks ago and whenever he got the extensions.
Yeah, the definition of insanity is when you repeat something that's not working. So if they wind up with another near 500 season, what do you think would be the most logical change that he could make to shake things up?
Well, can I counter too that they, you know, repeating something, they have fired their manager, they fired their president of baseball operations, they have gotten rid of a lot of coaches in the last few years. At some point, you can't keep going to those people. At some point, maybe you have to look at how you're developing, or at some point, you put it on the clubhouse, which I think Buster has done. I don't know what they'll do at the end of the season if it keeps going this way and they end up 500, because it is going to be pretty similar to previous years, but we've seen that's cost people their jobs. I think there probably would be some staff changes in that case. And look, Buster will have had a full year to digest and see who he wants to keep and what he wants to do behind the scenes.
How much of the front office scouting department changed over from Farhan to Buster?
A fair amount. I mean, there was, you know, new pro scouting director. Zach got promoted, so there's been some new guys. But there also are a lot of people who have been here a while, and I think those people have had success at times, and they've also experienced some mediocre seasons now. So I've been through a few of these now. I know September in a season like this, if it keeps going like this, is not at all comfortable for coaches. Usually those people are on short contracts. A lot of them are year to year. So it's not going to be a comfortable time, I think. And I typically come down on the side of feeling for those people as well, because they're just not making a lot of money and they're not guaranteed of what's next. They're not the ones making 17, 20 million. And I think that's one thing that I'll go back to. We have heard that from Buster a couple times, and because he has been in that spot as the player, as the star of a team. And I think he wants to, you know, a little bit more of the shouldering of the blame to be on those guys.
Alex, do you think they got any buyer's remorse on Jung-Hoo Lee?
No, I don't think so. I mean, look, at the very least, it's been a fan favorite here, which they needed more of. I think what they probably are going to look at the end of the year is go that they probably played him too much in the first half. And that is the one thing that we don't know about him, just because we saw 37 games last year. But look, he is, we saw this with Yaz over the years. I'll go back to, I remember covering Blanco. Like, Blanco was great for 2 weeks. If you played him for 2 months, at some point you'd look up and the numbers weren't there. So I do think it's maybe easy to point at the frame and go, it looks like he's worn down. But I do think he looks like he is worn down a little bit, especially at the end of the first half. And I do wonder, going into next year, if they will feel like maybe they need to find a few more days off and ways to keep him fresh. I also think, and it's one thing I asked Bob Melvin today, just about the base running, because of the injury last year and because he was rehabbing, basically going into spring training, they didn't work on some things that they want to work on this offseason. He probably does need an adjustment a little bit in how he plays the game and going the other way a little bit more, being more of a singles hitter, putting more pressure on the defense. And he's a fast guy. He just doesn't steal a whole lot or try to steal a whole lot. And I think that's going to be something that they talk to him about going into the offseason.
Carson Wisenhunt sent out today. Tyler Fitzgerald recalled. Do you think that's just to get more bats up, knowing you're going to skip Carson? Would you anticipate he comes back up and makes another start in the next 8 days or so?
Yeah, I think this is one of those roster moves for today, when specifically they have a lefty on the mound and they didn't have another right-handed option in the outfield. So they'll get Fitz back up here and maybe keep him and keep him in that utility role. I mean, I don't know that they need both Gilbert and McRae here when they have Lee in center field. So we'll see how that goes. But I think we'll see Wisenhunt again this year. And, one thing that will happen at the end of the year, if I keep saying if it goes this way, just because they're trying to chase down a Mets team that loses every night seemingly. So that has kind of kept them in this race. But if they do fall out of it, I do think they want to take a look at Tidwell. They want to see Birdsong again. So there are some guys they would like to see Wisenhunt again. There are some guys they would like to see down the stretch. And there will be innings, because there are guys in the rotation currently who probably at some point will need to be shut down.
Is Bryce Eldridge one of the people they would like to see in that scenario?
I think they would. Again, they're being extremely, deliberate with that one and making sure. Like, I know there were some people speculating when Wilmer hurt the hamstring and then Gerard goes down. When he comes up, he's here ideally to stay, and he is here to play every day. And I asked Buster a couple weeks ago. We had him on our podcast after the deadline, and I asked him about his experience as a September call-up, and he's like, I don't know that I really got much out of it. He got like 17 at-bats over a few weeks. He didn't play a whole lot. I think he believes pretty strongly that when Bryce arrives, that he is in the lineup every day for the rest of the season when that happens. And we'll see when they get to that point, if they get to that point this year. I think right now there's no pressure, because it is, for as much as we talked about early in the year about Wade and first base and all that, like, right now they have Devers and they have Dom Smith, who's been their best hitter maybe the last couple of weeks, and they feel okay there, and they're totally fine with letting Bryce figure it out. And there are the highlights are great. The power is great. He's doing a really good job. I've heard really positive things about how hard he's working defensively and how far he has come along there. But he is striking out a fair amount, and there is, a way to pitch to him right now in AAA, and big league pitchers will execute on those pitches. So there's some work to be done, but but they are very excited about him. And I think, you know, ideally, if this keeps going this way, they would get a look at him in September.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, and Odyssey Sports Station in the home of the Golden State Warriors and Valkyries, always live on the free Odyssey app, coming to you live from the Laughing Monk Studios. And we're talking with Alex Pavlovich of NBC Sports Bay Area.